This is Audible.
Audible presents The Art of Living Alone and Loving It, Your Inspirational Toolkit for a Whole and Happy Life by Jane Matthews, narrated by Jane Matthews. But now I feel that solitude, far from being the price, is turning out to be the prize. Alex Kates Schulman. To my kindred band of soloists, this book is for you. Introduction. I didn't choose to live alone. Few of us do. I fell into it post-divorce, not with an elegant swan dive, but with a graceless belly flop. Like a dodgy blind date, I can't say living alone and I hit it off straight away. But now I have learned not only to appreciate it, but even prefer it, and I can't see myself ever relinquishing my solo path. I don't see it as a compromise, a holding pattern, or a bump on the road toward the sunny heights of coupledom. I am happy, but it took a while to get here. There are three groups of soloists: never married or partnered, divorced, and widowed. A few of us have deliberately chosen a solo life, but the reality is that most of us have had our hand played for us. It doesn't matter whether it was choice or chance. Whatever got us to this point, we all want the same thing. Not just to make the most of it, but to lead a textured, fulfilling life with joy in it. A life brimming with opportunities and potential, lived in technicolor, not black and white, with Dolby surround sound thrown in. A life in which I throw a pair of sixes more often than not, and can make my own memories. While researching this book, I spoke with many women who are living such lives. I came away deeply impressed and humbled. Their stories are quilted into the book. They swim in their independent waters like frolicsome otters, reveling in every twist and turn. I believe living alone well is a skill that isn't difficult, but requires some thought and effort, like learning a language. In The Art of Living Alone, I will share what has worked for me and for others. Whether you view living alone as the ultimate compromise or the ultimate luxury, we all agree that it throws up daily challenges, such as cooking for one, organizing a holiday, eating out alone, juggling finances, or trying not to succumb to the siren call of wine, Ugg boots, and binge Netflix. And there are the less tangible tests, like nailing the octopus of loneliness to the wall and holding your head high in a society where living alone is viewed, consciously or not, as synonymous with failure, the runner-up prize. If you are pretty happy with your lot and want a few tips to make living alone better, there are plenty in this book. If you are after more profound change, this book can also help. I believe that to be truly content living alone, it pays to scrutinize every aspect of your life, including your relationships, health, home, finances, interests, and spirituality, and then take action. There's a chapter dedicated to each of these topics. Some of the suggestions will resonate, others won't, and that's fine. I'll provide the map and you choose the route. 10 things I learned from writing this book. 1. Some of the strongest, most capable, most sociable, most loving people in the world live alone. 2. You have to like yourself. Nothing else will work until you nail this one. 3. Living alone is a skill that requires effort, but you will find strength you never knew you had. 4. Reframe the issue. Focus on living your life to the full. You just happen to live by yourself. 5. Being alone does not equate to being lonely. 6. You, and only you, are responsible for your happiness. It lies in your hands, the safest place for it. 7. Being alone gives you the time and space to unearth who you are and who you want to be. 8. Most people lie about what they eat alone. 9. The world belongs to those who do. 10. Tops with buttons up the back are Satan's triumph. I feel a natural sense of camaraderie and empathy with other people who live by themselves. We're an amazing bunch, with so much to offer and so much going for us. I hope you'll find some inspiration and useful ideas in the pages of this book. Think of it as a conversation with a friend. Jane. You live alone, therefore you are lonely, sad, bitter, frustrated, loveless, miserable, isolated, envious, desperate, troubled, bored, boring, solitary, depressed, scared, selfish, vulnerable, excluded, overwhelmed, a spinster, divorcee or widow, an old maid, tragic, alienated, rejected, living a bleak life, demoralized, ashamed, unloved, frightened, strange, needy, inadequate, daunted, financially disadvantaged, diminished, belittled, desolate, odd, wretched, unfortunate, pitiful, pathetic, regrettable, friendless, companionless, defective, forlorn, empty, separate, ashamed, a loser, full of self-pity, invisible, unwanted, unassisted, neglected, unmissed, forsaken, abandoned, judged, lonesome, afraid, compromised, a failure, bereft, insecure, fearful, full of regret, anxious, self-absorbed, and 100% likely to be a cat owner. No, not me, not you. Living alone offers us freedom, pride, time, resilience, no judgment, independence, unexpected joys, flexibility, space to reflect, solitude, serenity, creativity, courage, self-understanding, opportunities to learn and explore, solo travel adventures, self-reliance, power, silence, the opportunity to discover who we are and want to be, freedom, relief from crowds, self-awareness, meaning, purpose, control, self-nurturing, freedom, authenticity, integrity, spontaneity, transformation, liberation, decadence, sense of mastery, self-esteem, space to sleep diagonally, self-sufficiency, thrills, autonomy, freedom, quiet, chance to be self-contained, peace, wholeness, strength, empowerment, space, tranquility, opportunity, rectitude, potential, confidence, aplomb, self-possession, freedom, choices, a sanctuary, self-expression, chance to follow our instincts, peace and an untouched fridge. Oh, and did I mention freedom? Chapter 1. Living Alone. Revised Expectations. Society's Assumptions. We are a mighty army. Transformation. Living with yourself, not by yourself. I have succumbed to the siren call of my bed. Curled around my laptop, I am writing from my queen-sized oasis, dappled with wintry Sydney sun. The silence is occasionally interrupted by the squeaky call of a minor bird. I am still in my daggy walking pants from a yomp around the park with the dog at the crack of dawn. I am steeped in solitude. Unshowered, unbreakfasted. It is midday. Sound familiar? The thing about living alone is there's no one to criticize, and no one to critique. Much as I love the land of solo living, it can be fraught with pitfalls, not least because it's always potentially track pants o'clock. I reluctantly haul myself out of bed, shower, and head to my desk downstairs. Not for the first time, I am reminded that living alone requires discipline. I share my house with too many cookbooks and a recalcitrant Airedale Terrier, but no one with two legs. It took me a long time to appreciate living alone, and there was much trial and error. I fell into solo living unexpectedly, and as the marital nest was hoiked away from under me, I was thrown back on my own resources, literally and figuratively. What started as a tentative flapping has evolved, slowly and unexpectedly, into a confidence soar. I now love living alone, and I'm very good at it. Blimey, I never saw that coming. You've got this. You are better prepared than you think. Think back to times in your life that have equipped you. Here are some of mine. A country childhood and a precocious, boy-loving older sister meant lots of time spent alone. I've done this before. Watching my mother abandon a career as a gifted fashion designer to fulfill the role of 1960s housewife and forever carry a tiny pebble of regret. Do what you love. Getting my first job and realizing I was really good at it. Channel that confidence. Making a life in new countries, not knowing anyone. I've proven my self-sufficiency. Having children, it's not just about me. The feelings of immense sadness and rejection, like bullets in slow motion, following divorce and the death of my parents. I've been through worse before. I am still loved. First book being published. I have a voice. I look back now and can see that when bad things happened to me, I was building strength and capabilities with more power than I appreciated. Strength plus strength plus strength times capabilities equals power. You will have to draw on that power when living alone. Often it's not the big issues, loneliness, money, health, career, the future, Christmas, that are the most challenging aspects, but the small, relentless niggles, dripping taps, carrying lots of shopping bags, receiving bad news, taking the rubbish out, having no one to download to, cleaning up dog vomit when you get in from work, killing a cockroach, feeling unwell, moving heavy things, exasperating bureaucracy, running out of loo paper, or eating meatloaf 3 nights in a row that threatened to overwhelm. Not being able to twist open the lid of a stupid jar can bring me to my knees. I am reduced to a puppet with my strings snipped. Sometimes I feel like a tiny figure under the towering surf of Hokusai's great wave. You will get through that feeling, I promise. With a bit of effort, planning, and being open to new experiences, over time it gets easier. You will find you are as capable as you need to be. More on this in the next chapter. Solitaire, a precious stone, especially a diamond, set by itself. Macquarie Dictionary Definition. Revised expectations. My Dick and Jane reading books led me to believe I'd follow a certain life path, featuring a tall, lantern-jawed husband, a house with a picket fence, shiny children who'd be content playing with wooden toys, and a perky dog with silky ears called Spot. See Spot run! In the event, the dog was the only part that manifested. And, as I write, listening to the thrum of Rory snoring in a blissful, farty sleep, I realize even that didn't go exactly according to plan. I hadn't bargained on living alone, but now I wouldn't have it any other way. My expectations have been revised, not lowered, and in fact I set the bar much higher for myself than I ever would have as half of a couple or engulfed in a family situation. But of course it's not perfect. You have to be realistic and reframe some assumptions. Self-awareness is a supreme gift, a treasure as precious as life. Irvin D. Yalom. How society sees us. There remains a stigma, for women more than men, about living alone in a society where couples and families are considered the norm. Small things signal your status, such as filling in a form with the options never married, separated but not divorced, divorced, widowed, married. Invisible subtitles read, you missed the boat, failure, failure, poor you, congratulations. Where's the happily solo option? Sometimes the relentless conveyor belt of couples threatens to overwhelm, especially at restaurants and parties. The animals continue to plod up the gangplank into the ark two by two, and you get the impression that, hold up, Mr. Noah, party of one, isn't in the script. I feel I am zigging while the rest of the world zags. We soloists are the outliers on the graph of society, a bit like being left-handed, but more so. It's a good analogy because there are as many of us as there are lefties, about 10% of the population. Once you're attuned to it, you'll notice how readily and steadily the media embraces the lazy cliché of the person living alone. Like Miss Lonely Hearts in Hitchcock's Rear Window, or Crazy Dee Dee in Modern Family, or the baddies in Scooby-Doo, most of whom I'm pretty sure live alone in abandoned fairgrounds. Other clichés involve slit-pupiled cats who live for the day they can devour their mistress's corpse, or lonely and bitter spinsters, divorcees, widows, with freezers full of TV dinners, living life vicariously through reality TV and waiting for a man to rescue them. Like Miss Havisham, mourning a life that might have been. Or, lordy, lordy, poor Belle from Disney's animated Beauty and the Beast, who resorted to talking, or was it singing, to the cutlery in the absence of any two-legged companions. When I was a child, my older sister pointed out that because my third toe was bigger than my second, I was a witch. No two ways about it. The proof was there for all to see. I ran crying to my mother, "I'm a witch, I'm a witch! Just look at my toes!" What a brilliant piece of manipulation on the part of my sister. I never thought to question the dubious correlation between size of toes and witchyhood, but just accepted what she said. While it's not as obvious as toe size or talking to spoons, there are subtle telltale signs that can identify women who live alone. These include a lack of eye contact, dressing to be invisible, and a certain bowed, efficient brittleness. At the other end of the spectrum, there can be a slightly desperate overcompensating and oversharing by some women who miss the contact and attention of other people. You can spot both types in a crowd. Don't join that club. We need to be vigilant that we don't tiptoe across the line into weird or transparent. We have to be our own role models, showing in our bearing and demeanour that all is well. The fastest growing demographic in the world. We are a mighty army. There are nearly 300 million of us globally. We're part of the biggest social trend since the rise of baby boomers. 2 million Australians live alone, a quarter of all households, and two-thirds of us prefer it that way. Solo dwellers are the fastest growing housing demographic in Australia, and the Australian Institute of Family Studies predicts that by 2026, single-person households will outnumber traditional nuclear families. This is consistent with the global trend, which has seen a rise of almost 50% in the number of people living alone in the past 15 years. Today, 32% of American households are single dwellers, over half of them women. A hefty half of all Manhattan homes contain people living alone. That's pipped to the post by some parts of Scandinavia, where 60% of households are soloists. The rise of people living alone is not only a Western phenomenon. There is a steep rise in China and India too, albeit off a small base. Of course, only a fraction of these are people consciously choosing the solo life. People are getting married later, we have an aging population with spouses outliving their partners, plus those of us in the middle who are not in a relationship or are divorced. Despite the large numbers, I still feel part of an unacknowledged shadow population. Solo dwellers account for 35% of all consumer spending. So why do companies, yes, food manufacturers, supermarkets, banks, holiday companies, restaurants, I'm talking to you, ignore us? Where are the products tailored for ones? It is the privilege of loneliness. In privacy, one may do as one chooses. Virginia Woolf, Mrs. Dalloway. A transformational experience. Living alone can be the tip of an iceberg of transformation. A catalyst for action. It is not a shutting down of opportunities, but an opening up. The main benefits of being hand solo are the opportunities for self-discovery and the satisfaction in completing a PhD in self-reliance. Like an archaeologist, you get to excavate the authentic you, warts and all. You find out what you like and you don't like about yourself, have the time and space to work on it, think about what you want out of life and how to go about getting it. Solo living gives you the space to imagine and curate your life with no compromise. If you are new to it, allow yourself some time to let go of the old life, whether it was good or bad. Throw off the bowline and let yourself drift in neutral for a while as you gradually find your bearings. Then you'll be in the right space to identify some markers and move on to embrace your new personal world. It can take a while to get used to and appreciate. So don't beat yourself up if you find it hard going. We all do sometimes. It's a gradual shifting of gears. living by yourself or with yourself. You can't live your life believing you came second, or mourning a parallel life that you might have led, used to have, or feel you deserved if only it hadn't slipped through your fingers like a golden snitch. This is your reality now, your very own house of life, and you owe it to yourself to open every damn door and see what lies beyond. You own it, you inhabit it. It might seem like semantics, but there really is a big difference between living by yourself and living with yourself. An acceptance and a peace. It puts you on the front foot and makes you accountable. You can make it a bento box of delights or a Pandora's box of struggles. Same box. You make the choice, and our lives are built choice by choice. I saw one book refer to this as intentionality, a word that sets off my bullshit antenna, but probably quite accurate. Design your life the way you want it. You can make it easy or you can make it hard. The difference is in your mindset, and that's what the next chapter is about. To exist is to change. To change is to mature. To mature is to create oneself endlessly. Henri Bergson. Takeaways. Consider the times in your life that have prepared you for living alone. You've got this. Revise your expectations. Buck society's cliches of a woman living alone. We are part of a mighty army. Living alone can be the catalyst for transformation. Live with yourself, not by yourself. Chapter 2. Mental strength and shift. Tools to keep you strong, facing up to loneliness. Living alone is not for the faint-hearted. I'm inspired by the people I meet who live alone and love it. As Betty Davis famously said, old age ain't no place for sissies, and neither is living alone. For all its precious gifts of time and space, living alone comes with snakes as well as ladders. We learn to stay calm and carry on long before the posters told us to. Our mettle is tested every single day. Given our numbers, living alone should be the new normal, but it doesn't feel like it. We belong to a different tribe. There are times I have felt sheet of glass invisible and diminished by a society where I don't seem to tick the boxes. We have to be tough, resilient, and learn to dig deep. I've developed a protective carapace, but I'm aware there's a fine line between self-protection and coming across as brittle, finicky, and defensive. It's a balancing act, and sometimes it gets to me. Just when I'm having a great day, someone might say something thoughtless in passing, oblivious to its impact, which sends me into a tailspin. It can get tiring convincing everyone, and sometimes even ourselves, that we like living alone. The following 12 tools can help you navigate the treacherous shallows of solo living. Tool number 1. Know who you want to be. Pick 3 adjectives that capture who you want to be. They will change over time, but it is useful to land them, as they set a platform of values on which to base choices and actions. Some of the words might be useful for a short time when you have a specific goal to achieve. Others will stay with you for longer. It's up to you. They don't all have to be serious. If you have faced some hard times, throw in a couple of uplifting ones. Here are some values to consider. Positive, courageous, kind, capable, powerful, inspirational, calm, optimistic, wise, gentle, loving, strong, gracious, compassionate, open, efficient, friendly, active, gregarious, patient, happy, generous, passionate, disciplined, committed, and caring. Act like the person you want to be, and eventually you become that person. Be the light you seek. Tool number 2. You are in control of how you react. There will be many times when you will need to call on your inner resources to be strong and brave. You have to accept that you can't outrun negative feelings or try to push them back like King Canute with the waves. You have to confront them or align yourself with his feelings, get to understand them better, and take control from the inside out. I speak from experience, because some nights the needling, poking fingers of doubt and fear creep into my mind in the cracks between sleep and wakefulness. I worry that I will grow ill, old, and die alone, and that I will not be missed. Jane, 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 get a grip. When you are by yourself, your mind can run away to irrational places, down rabbit holes of hooded claw scariness, or take flight in the sky like a runaway kite. It isn't rational, it isn't real, it isn't true, and in the cold light of day, it will be fine. Remind yourself that you are in control of your thoughts, not the other way round. It is useful to bear this in mind when people upset you. Often they are unaware of the impact of their words and actions. I tell myself it is no more than a reflection of how they feel about themselves. When you react impulsively, you give your power away. When someone really upsets me, I mentally hold up a shield with a mirror on the side facing them to protect myself and demonstrate that it is about them, not about me. One of the most useful pieces of advice given to me is that you can't affect how people act towards you or change certain events, but you can control how you react to them. You can't change the direction of the wind, but you can change the direction of your sails. It is the same with living alone. You may wish you had a partner or lived in a family, but the reality is that you don't. So it is how you react to your circumstances that determines how you enjoy your solo life. My own situation has shown me that hard times toughen you up. The grit in the oyster makes the pearl. So when things go wrong, and they will, imagine them as a series of curtains that you sweep aside to reveal a stronger, wiser you. Alternatively, just walk into the woods with a dozen eggs and pelt them against a tree with all your might. Feel your anger dissipate with satisfaction. People are lonely because they build walls instead of bridges. Joseph Fort Newton. Tool number 3. Staring loneliness down. It's Good Friday morning of the Easter long weekend, and I will be completely alone for all of it. My ex has taken the children away for a family trip with his girlfriend and her daughter. Ouch. Part of me is delighted to have 4 clear days to myself. 4 whole days. With nothing planned. There is so much that I want and need to do, not least write this book, catch up on emails, clear the decks, etc. Most of me relishes the prospect, but I'd be lying to myself, and to you, if I didn't admit there is a speck, a mote of loneliness hanging in the air. It wriggles like a cell in a petri dish. Being alone is not the issue per se. It is our minds that create loneliness, and it wears many masks. It can present itself as sadness, apathy, listlessness, rejection, tiredness, or depression. It is palpable. It is real. It is not to be dismissed lightly. How can you tackle loneliness head on? It's hard to fight an enemy who has outposts in your head. Sally Kempton. It's normal. Surrender to it and move on. Loneliness comes with the territory. Fact. Every person I spoke to while researching this book brought up the topic of loneliness. Everyone feels it, some more, some less. It's like travelling through hilly countryside and slipping now and again into dark valleys. It is to be expected. Just don't stay there and pitch your tent. Substitute the word loneliness for sorrow in this quote from Flying Solo by Carol M. Anderson and Susan Stewart. You cannot prevent the birds of sorrow from flying over your head, but you can prevent them from building a nest in your hair. To stop it getting a grip, loneliness can be countered on 2 fronts, mentally and physically. The former is more powerful. Even though you can physically surround yourself with people, you know that how you feel has nothing to do with them, but is a condition of self. You can't outrun it. You are only running away from yourself. So accept it, surrender to it, and deal with it. This is a process described by Susan Baumgartner in her book My Waldron. Loneliness, once the captor of my spirit, now seems like a dear companion and wears the gentler name of solitude. It happens slowly, gradually. Instead of fighting loneliness, I learn to take it inside of me and to fill it with thoughts and fantasies and plans. I structured to be productive. I learn to count on its solid presence. It seems like I am never lonely anymore. Accept that loneliness, along with happiness, sadness, birth, death, love, and rapture, a part of the human condition, then move on. Keep loneliness in perspective. It's never as bad as it seems. Hanako was an elephant given to Japan by the government of Thailand in 1949 when she was just two. She lived in a small enclosure in Tokyo Zoo for the next 67 years and died recently without ever seeing another elephant again. She was dubbed the loneliest elephant in the world. The reason I mention her is to put your loneliness in perspective. However lonely we are, on the Hanako scale, it's nothing. Being lonely isn't about being alone. When you stop to think about it, and we rarely do, it isn't the act of being alone that makes us feel lonely. I agree with Roy Sharp, quoted in Celebrating Time Alone by Lionel Fisher, who said that it is living an unproductive, self-centered, unloving, friendless life that actually makes someone feel lonely. So take control and don't make yourself a casualty of loneliness. Pick these off one by one and work on making your life productive, outward-focused, and loving. You are important. There are times when I think that no one would miss me if I disappeared in a puff of smoke. That makes me feel lonely. Rationally, I'm sure they would. And to remind myself, I keep a big scrapbook with loving cards, letters, and emails from friends and family. I am important to them. I have it in writing. You have to have a sense of self-worth and to like yourself. You must be important to you. I cover this in more detail in Chapter 3. Don't let the fear of loneliness get to you. Franklin D. Roosevelt said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." Meaning fear is a state of mind that has the power to affect us if we let it. It is not a real physical thing, but it will have an impact on our minds if we allow it to. In his book, The Eighth Passenger, Miles Tripp tells how, during the Second World War, Lancaster bomber crews consisted of seven men, but they sometimes referred to the Eighth Passenger. This was a passenger they were all aware of, and who, although invisible, would influence the outcome of their mission. That passenger was fear, and they knew they had to control it. The fear of loneliness has the power to upset us more than loneliness itself, which has no capacity to harm us. Don't allow it to get a grip. Fold it up, put it in a box, and throw yourself wholeheartedly into something else. You are not alone. You are not alone in feeling lonely, because all over the world there are others feeling the same velvet sadness, and we're all connected by invisible threads. I'm willing to bet that somewhere right now, among the 300 million people who live by themselves, someone will feel as you do. Take comfort in that. Courage is the first of human qualities because it is the quality which guarantees the others. Aristotle. Be wary of social media. With technology, you are never really alone unless you choose to be. But somehow loneliness feels more acute, painful, and poignant in this switched-on, screen-filled, connected society. I can't be the only person who feels pangs of, what is it, envy, sadness, FOMO? Looking at some of the more smug Facebook postings as I sit at home, alone, on a wet Saturday night. I just know that I am not that lucky person laughing in the bosom of a jolly family gathering, sitting with partners at that dinner, or soaking up the atmosphere in Paris, Bali, or Bhutan with my husband. On balance, Facebook does not help loneliness. Block the ersatz friends and use technology proactively, Skyping or emailing friends, or joining a virtual community you're interested in. Think about what social media adds to or detracts from your life and cut your cloth accordingly. Ignore the advice on the internet. Sometimes the internet is invaluable. Other times it serves up a pile of steaming, well, you know what. When it comes to advice on countering loneliness, it's the latter. Here are some patronizing suggestions that I picked off the web in 5 minutes, along with my commentary in brackets afterwards. Gosh, they make my blood boil. Improving social skills. Some researchers argue that loneliness is primarily the result of lacking the interpersonal skills required to create and maintain relationships. Don't get me started on this one. Get out of the house and have some fun. Perhaps you're a bird watcher and you don't even know it yet. Go on, patronize me some more, please. Scope out potential friends. Creepy and desperate. Stay positive. You've never been lonely, have you? If you're lonely, don't dwell on the fact. Get up and get out. Go somewhere where there are a lot of people. Don't worry if you don't know any of them. Sometimes being around other people can help brighten your spirits, or can make you feel so much worse. Join a club, like a gardening club. You'll meet some mighty fine people, have fun doing work you'll love, and learn more about gardening. Plus, you'll be able to share your gardening wisdom with others, all of which will make you feel less lonely. Did you really say mighty fine? Another glib sentiment trotted out by someone who's never experienced loneliness. Don't sit back and feel defeated. Put a smile on your face and do something different to cure your loneliness. If only it were that easy, buddy. And finally, my personal favourite, get a pet. If Tom Hanks can live with Wilson for years, you could certainly benefit from a dog or a cat. Pets can make terrific companions. Just make sure you don't substitute their company for people. Try to maintain a few human connections so that you have others to talk to and lean on in trying times. So we might benefit from something more than a painted volleyball then. The sensitivity of Attila the Hun. Oh, patronizing at best, unhelpful and incredibly insensitive at worst, written by people who have never felt the icy breath of loneliness down their necks, nor its grey mist in their homes. Know what triggers the feeling of loneliness for you, and develop strategies accordingly. Sometimes loneliness lances through you, triggered by a couple whispering together in a restaurant, or coming home to a dark and silent house, or going to a New Year's Eve party, or when no one meets you at the airport, or just being alone for a weekend. It's different for everyone. Work out what makes you feel lonely, then set about deploying tactics to avoid those situations, or brace yourself and deploy your anti-loneliness toolkit. The anti-loneliness toolkit. Think of loneliness as a door that opens onto other things that will make you feel better. What's behind that door is very personal, and what works for one person won't work for another. Only you know what works for you. Here are some thought starters. Access a memory that makes you feel happy to your core. Have a go-to book you know you will get lost in. I'm quite partial to Tintin. Identify a specific TED talk or podcast that gives you a lift. Go to an art gallery. Finish something. Learn something new from YouTube. Immerse yourself in nature as best you can. Get out to the country or go to your local park. Organize some magazine subscriptions. Ignore the mainstream airbrush celebrity nonsense and find smaller niche magazines based on an interest you have, such as Cook's Illustrated, Parabola, Dumbo Feather, Art Doll, Monocle, Flea Market Decor, or Brand. Put aside a few copies for when you're down. Turn to the professionals. No, not counselors, but comedians. Find a particular comedy show that you love. It could be online, DVD, or an audiobook. My favorite is the BBC radio series Cabin Pressure. Do something to help someone else. Volunteer, offer someone a helping hand, or put $5 bills on strangers' windscreens with a note. Go for a walk you've never done before, or just do something you've never done before. Call a friend and tell them how you're feeling, but make sure it's a friend who knows the drill. In other words, make sure it is someone who will understand and listen to you and not just prattle on about themselves and their perfect life, which incidentally it rarely is. In the past, I've called the wrong friend and it can do more harm than good. The worst loneliness is not to be comfortable with yourself. Mark Twain. Is it loneliness or depression? Depression slinks in under your defenses. In tiny doses, it can sometimes reveal unspoken truths. Once you've been touched by it, you're in a much better position to help others. So I do understand the feelings of numbness, despair, and worthlessness that depression brings, and how you have to climb out from that, whether it is with a guide, a doctor, or counsellor, or by reviewing your own attitudes and actions. Andrew Solomon traveled the world researching his excellent book, The Noonday Demon, An Atlas of Depression, and came to the conclusion that the opposite of depression is not happiness, but vitality, taking action. It can be hard to tackle depression alone, and friends are not always the best people to help, as they lack training and don't want to fall into the sinkhole with you. If you need professional help, reach out and get it. Tool number 4, shift from loneliness to solitude. Paul Tillich wrote, "Our language has wisely sensed the two sides of being alone. It has created the word loneliness to express the pain of being alone, and it has created the word solitude to express the glory of being alone." Turn your back on loneliness with its judgment and isolation, and turn towards its more welcoming sister, solitude. Solitude brings with it a sense of choice and pride. You choose to partake in solitude, whereas loneliness is thrust upon you. So do a Rumpelstiltskin and spin the straw of loneliness into the gold of solitude. An old Buddhist scripture says, "A tenth of an inch difference and heaven and earth are set apart." Solitude and loneliness might also be separated by a tenth of an inch, but it's enough to make them different. Have patience and shuffle the cards. Miguel de Cervantes. Sarah Holbrook chose to embrace her solitude in an extreme way, selling her house and business and moving to a cabin in the woods in rural America. In Celebrating Time Alone by Lionel Fisher, she talks of how she chose to accept her fate, her aloneness, as a wonderful, precious secret, rather than being scared of it. You need to make a number of conscious mental shifts when you live alone, and this is one of them. Don't ever think about living alone as a sentence to be served. Shift your perspective, reimagine it. Solitude is not a weighty albatross around your neck. Let it embrace you and wrap its protective wings around you. It is a means to an end. Solitude rewards you if you listen. Often people attempt to live their lives backwards. They try to have more things or more money in order to do more of what they want so they will be happier. The way it works is actually the reverse. You must first be who you really are, then do what you need to do in order to have what you want. Margaret Young. Tool number 5, happiness on purpose. "If you want to be happy, be," said Tolstoy. He was onto something long before Harvard had its happiness center, and books like The Happiness Advantage and The Happiness Project captured our imaginations. The world is as you perceive it. So if you feel that you've missed out, or that the hand you've been dealt is unfair, that is your reality. I'm not glibly saying, think positive, with an annoying smiley face emoji, but research and common sense shows that a positive mindset leads to positive outcomes. Think about how you want to frame your day as soon as your feet touch the floor in the morning. The experts have proven that it is happiness that makes you successful, not the other way round. In his book, The 7 Secrets of Happiness, British broadcaster Giles Brandreth identified these rules. "You can't pick and choose," he warns. "You have to live by all of them." The rules are: 1. Cultivate a passion. 2. Be a leaf of a tree. Be an individual but connected to a bigger community. 3. Break the mirror. Avoid narcissism. 4. Don't resist change. Embrace the new. 5. Audit your happiness. If you spend more than half your time doing something you don't enjoy, do something about it. 6. Live in the moment. Relish what's happening now and don't worry too much about the future. 7. Be happy. Choose to be optimistic, says the Dalai Lama. It feels better. Dr. Martin Seligman, in his turn, suggests 5 factors that contribute to happiness: positive emotion and pleasure, achievement, relationships, engagement, and meaning. The last 2 are the most important. If we're engaged in what we do and find ways to make our lives more meaningful, happiness will show up as a byproduct. Dr. Tim Sharp, aka Dr. Happy, has 7 pointers: nurture relationships, look ahead, use your strengths, be healthy, look on the bright side, be thankful and forgive, and create purpose. I'm a realist and do not expect my life to be wall-to-wall happiness. I'm just asking for a few fun-sized potato chip bags of the stuff, and I appreciate it's up to me. We are all walking mirrors, so even though it might take a while to deploy some of these strategies, just adopting an optimistic outlook will attract similar. Tool number 6, toughen up with a totem. We soloists are trapeze artists without a safety net. Criticism and hurtful comments can quickly knock us off balance, and I am constantly surprised and disappointed by how many of those there can be. Some come from strangers, others from friends or frenemies. Most of these people don't live by themselves and don't have an inkling of how they hurt us. That's fine, life goes on. Without being Pollyanna-ish about it, hard times have a way of offering an opportunity for growth, even if it takes years to learn the lesson, maybe for them as well. We have to develop a thick skin. Wrap yourself in a metaphorical cloak and watch the hurt repelled. I have learned lessons in resilience from 3 wild animals and have adopted them as my unofficial totems. They are a special wild dog, a lioness, and a bison. Solo the Wild Dog. When I was a child, I was given a book called Solo by Hugo van Lawick. It is about an African wild dog puppy, the runt, whose siblings were killed by another dog. Solo is picked on and struggles to keep up with the pack while they ignore her, but she never, ever gives up. You can see how the story ends in wildfilmhistory.org under Hugo van Lawick and the Wild Dogs of Africa. I love the image of Solo with her bright eyes and her ears torn by the other dogs, the epitome of resilience. Her example stuck with me. A lioness. When I was in the process of getting divorced, one image had a profound impact on me. It's from a bas-relief in the British Museum of an Assyrian lioness, badly wounded but still fighting. Now I see myself as a lone lioness, strength regained, self-contained and proud. A bison. Here's an interesting fact. When a bad snowstorm hits, bison are the only creatures that instinctively turn around and walk into it, knowing it is the quickest way through. Maybe I'm getting anthropomorphically carried away, but you've got to love an animal that confronts its hardships head-on, no flinching. Solo's persistence, the lioness's desperate resilience, and the bison's ability to confront things directly remind me to stay strong against naysayers, backbiters, and frenemies, the lot of them. If we all threw our problems in a pile and saw everybody else's, we'd grab ours back. Regina Brett. Tool number 7. Turn your adventure of living alone into a project. Why not write about or document your story of living alone? What works? What advice would you give to others? What have been the disasters and what have you learned from them? What was the process of getting rid of the L in alone and turning it into a 1? There are several women who have written about living alone, including Joan Anderson, A Year by the Sea, Anne Morrow Lindbergh, Gift from the Sea, and Alex Kate Shulman, Drinking the Rain. Read them for more inspiration. Living alone well is a state of mind that has to be cultivated. Explore it as you would a new country, and draw a map of your life by yourself as an island. What are the good parts and what are the challenging parts? What are the beautiful parts you're proud of? Which parts are still unexplored? Tool number 8, be kind to yourself. As women, we are very tough on ourselves, and I think living alone exacerbates this. I feel like the king pole, the center pole of the big top, responsible for holding everything up and sometimes not doing a very good job of it. We ask so much of ourselves, and when we fall short, it knocks our self-esteem. Not everyone does amazing things. Just doing one thing suggested in this book puts you ahead of the pack. So don't think about anyone else. Congratulate yourself on what you've done. And don't fret about what you have yet to achieve. It will happen. Everyone's journey is different. Tool number 9, find your ikigai, your purpose. Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Asked the American poet Mary Oliver. In Japanese culture, everyone has an ikigai, or some reason to get up in the morning. It's a healthy passion for something that makes us feel life is worth living. A purpose, in other words. Finding, or more accurately, unearthing it, helps give you direction, like putting a destination into Google Maps. I would thoroughly recommend the book Finding Your Element, How to Discover Your Talents and Passions and Transform Your Life, by Ken Robinson, which offers several practical techniques and tools to nail your element or purpose. It is split into 10 chapters. 1. Finding your element. 2. What are you good at? 3. How do you know? 4. What do you love? 5. What makes you happy? 6. What's your attitude? 7. Where are you now? 8. Where's your tribe? 9. What's next? 10. Living a life of passion and purpose. By the time you have completed all the exercises, I guarantee you'll be the closest you ever have to pinpointing your ikigai. If finding your purpose sounds too daunting a task and you aren't drawn to it, that's fine. Not all of us have a huge mission. In their book, The One Thing, authors Gary Keller and Jay Passapan advise, think of it simply as the one thing you want your life to be about more than any other. Try writing down something you'd like to accomplish and then describe how you'd do it. Pick a direction, start marching down that path and see how you like it. Time brings clarity, and if you find you don't like it, you can always change your mind. It's your life. There are many threads of experience in our lives that can point us towards our purpose. Sometimes it is already present in our lives in some way, but maybe on periphery or in the past. Lift up the top of your mind, grab some chopsticks and have a poke around. Don't feel it has to be big and grand. It might not be just right for you. It will come to you. There's no need to chase too hard. Life speaks to us all the time. There are often clues. Our job is to listen. Tool number 10. Be your own good company, motivator, and cheerleader. You are Team Jane, or Team Sarah, or Team whatever your name is, a team of one. You spend more time with yourself than anyone else, so make sure you're good company. I'm lucky enough to enjoy my own company, but if you don't enjoy yours, what can you do to make it better? People rarely give compliments or praise, so fill the vacuum yourself. Don't wait for others to say, well done, or good for you. Pat yourself on the back regularly. You're doing so well just putting one foot in front of another. Very little is needed to make a happy life. It is all within yourself, in your way of thinking. Marcus Aurelius. Tool number 11. Slam the door in negativity's face. Nora's door slam at the end of Ibsen's A Doll's House is a famous moment in the history of theatre. It was called The Door Slam Heard Around the World and is a metaphor for Nora finding her independence and putting her unsatisfactory marriage behind her, very unusual at a time when women were expected to be submissive to men. We need to acknowledge negative thoughts, even naming them if that helps. You are pettiness, you are impatience, you are frustration. Then we have to be as firm as Nora about slamming the door on them. Instead of whining about how and why you're in a particular situation, find the nearest reflective surface and work out what you're going to do about it. When you are complaining, you become a living, breathing crap magnet, as T. Harv Eker memorably put it. He challenges us not to complain at all for 7 days and see how it changes your life. Being a victim might get you attention in the short term, but it won't get you friends or success in the long run. Of course things get tough. I don't live in pretendy land. My heart still contracts a little when I hear myself squeaking a thank you at the supermarket checkout, not having spoken to a soul all day, or I wake up at night crushed under a wall of worry, missing the comfort of knowing that someone has my back. No thought lives in your head rent-free, and negative thoughts take their toll. They whisper in your ear, you're old, you're not attractive, you're a failure, you're overweight. How could anyone love you? What do you contribute to the world? It is ridiculous, given how strong women inherently are, that we are enthralled to these whining voices. Repel and rebuff them with a dynamic force. We need to diminish their power or they will establish a stronghold. Avoid developing a habit of discontent, which is an emotional cul-de-sac. Pull yourself out of it, wring the shipwreck water out of your hair and carry on. You choose the thoughts that circulate in your mind. Here are some ways to stop the negative soundtrack. If you have a grievance, tell someone about it, just once. Then go for a walk, meditate, and or write it in your journal or on a piece of paper and tear it up or burn it, then let it go. Don't keep complaining. No one is interested. Just tell yourself to stop it. Do something, however small, that notches you towards your goals. Accept that what you worry about in the middle of the night is irrational and in the light of day is manageable. Distraction. List the names of all of your friends, your favourite books, a poem you've learned, anything. Seek out the company of a positive friend, a radiator, not a drain. Reimagine the problem and focus on the positives within it. Know that negative things are not permanent. Imagine someone else saying what you're thinking. How would you react? Help someone else. Write down your strengths. Make a file of positive music. A couple of my favourites are Pran by Gary Sherman and On Earth as It Is in Heaven from the Mission soundtrack by Ennio Morricone. Play it loudly. Say to yourself, as does the Broadway star Sierra Bogus, you are enough. You are so enough. It's unbelievable how enough you are. Tool number 12, act as if. The words we choose have a powerful impact on how we feel, the way we approach things, and the outcome. The more you say, I want, or I need, the less likely you are to get it. Instead, act as if it's already happened and you're reaping the benefits. So replace, I wish I was successful, with, I am successful, and I wish I had a job I liked, with, I have a fulfilling job, and then act accordingly. You'll notice a remarkable difference in your attitude straight away. This frame of mind is much more likely to lead to success. I know, because I had to find a full-time job in my 50s, and now I have to find another one. My negative voice whispers, I'm too old, no one will hire me. I recognize that it is a self-fulfilling prophecy, so have replaced it with, I'm already adding value to the clients I work with. I'm calmly confident in my ability and have meaningful experience to offer. Still, sitting at home with a positive attitude, reading The Secret, and eating crumpets won't get me a job. Shaking the network tree and sending out my CV with a cracking covering letter will. I now approach it with confidence and act as if. Alternatively, if acting as if doesn't come naturally, reframe the negative issues into positive, practical, how can I fix this questions. I can't afford it becomes, how can I afford it? I can't becomes, how can I? I'm finding it hard becomes, I'm working towards. I should becomes, I will. You get the idea. Try playing positive word bingo. Write down half a dozen positive words and make sure to get them into your conversation or emails for the rest of the day. You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You must do the thing you think you cannot do. Eleanor Roosevelt. This too shall pass. When things threaten to overwhelm and you feel your little solo rowing boat is taking on water, keep things in perspective. Whatever troubles you are going through only represent a tiny dot on your line of life. In 1 year or five, it will matter less or not at all. You are stronger than you think. Takeaways. Living alone requires enormous amounts of mental strength. Luckily, we have it. Know who you want to be. 3 adjectives. You are in control of how you react. Stare loneliness down. Shift from loneliness to solitude. Be happy on purpose. Toughen up with a totem, a wild dog, a lioness, a bison. Turn your adventure of living alone into a project. Be kind to yourself. Find your ikigai. Be your own good company, motivator, and cheerleader. Slam the door in negativity's face.